Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to the next round on the Leave It in the Ring radio network of David Duenez. I'm your co-host, Steve K9 Kim, and joining me from the Bay Area, where he's left his heart, Golden Gate Gabe Montoya. And folks, you heard the theme music. As they said in the Blues Brothers, we're bringing the band back, Gabe. We're bringing the band back.
And I'm actually, Steve, right now, I'm doing my annual Palm Desert Christmas special. So I'm in an undisclosed condo somewhere in the Coachella Valley doing today's show. If the internet gets kooky or I disappear for a moment, just filibuster. I'll be back.
All right. This is Monday. Our year-end edition of the next round as we bid adieu to 2016. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598, or you can engage us on Twitter at SteveUCNLive and at Gabriel_Montoya. Let us know, what is your moment of the year, story of the year, fight of the year, fighter of the year, knockout of the year, or anything else on your mind? Let us know. Also, at the top of the next hour, 5 p.m. Pacific time, Jim Boone, Mr. KO Tickets, talking about the early sales for Golovkin Jacobs and the ticket forecast for some of the shows coming up in January in the first part of 2017. But let's get started with round number one, some year-end awards here on the next round. Gabe, Fighter of the Year. The consensus seems to be that it's Vasyl Lomachenko, Joe Smith, Carl Frampton, Terrence Crawford, and maybe even Manny Pacquiao. Who gets the Montoya in that category?
Carl Frampton. I just think far and away, he just exemplified what a fighter, what a world-class prize fighter should be. He traveled. He fought top opposition. He won under tough circumstances where the crowd wasn't always with him. He beat a rival. Now, he also exemplified what modern-day world-class boxing is about and only fought twice this year. So that is a bit of a knock on him. But the win over Scott Quigg in a fight we all kind of like to forget about, but a tough fight nonetheless, a dangerous fight, a fight he could have avoided, I suppose. But he didn't. He won it. He moves up in weight, captures another belt, and makes history, you know, and beating Leo Santa Cruz, taking the guy's O in a close fight with everything against him, really. I mean, the promotion wasn't about him. It was all about Leo. And Carl Frampton pulls out the win. You got to love it. I just think those are two better wins than everybody else on that list had.
I agree. Again, not a lot of quantity, but the quality. Beating a rival in Scott Quigg and then going across the ocean on what is semi-enemy turf and beating Leo Santa Cruz, handing two pretty good fighters their first L's, that means a lot. Now, I do say this, Gabe, and I don't know if you agree or disagree. Just like in certain belts in weight categories, if you really don't believe that there really is a quote-unquote fighter of the year, if the pickings are that slim, I'm of the belief, and again, we're not an official awards body. We're not the Boxing Writers Association of America. Gabe, there are many times we could just leave this award vacant, right? Because there are years there really is not a lot to choose from.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, I didn't vote for president in 2008 or 2012. I didn't like the choices. So, I don't disagree. That's why I don't hold a big grudge with you against your decision to be apolitical. You know, sometimes the choices are horrible. And so this year, I think the choices were just – I just want a little more out of these guys, you know. Fighting twice a year and fighting top opposition is kind of your job as champion, isn't it? Look at Manny Pacquiao. People want to give it to him for beating Tim Bradley again. and beating Jesse Vargas. I just don't, you know, those are good wins, but he should have added a dangerous opponent like Terrence Crawford to the mix, fought three times for the once in the forever, and he would have been fighter of the year if he won that fight. But to me, it's just, he's just kind of in cruise control. And beating Nicholas Walters, granted, it wasn't Lomachenko's fault that Nicholas Walters didn't fight forever and was rusty coming in, but still, that's the guy that he beat. You can only beat the guys presented to you, but eh. And Roman Martinez, or the shell that houses Roman Martinez's soul, no, I just don't think that was that big of a win.
Gabe,
it was preordained.
You know who I believe has the strongest case, whose name is not Carl Frampton? I think it's Joe Smith. Listen, he had three fights. The first one, Fabiano Pena. That's a club fight. He did what he's supposed to. But when you win when you're not supposed to, in emphatic fashion, I mean, this guy literally came out of nowhere. I still remember when they announced that Andrej Fonfara, as a 15-1 favorite, was taking on a guy by the name of Joe Smith. I said, okay, that really can't be his name. And that name is so common, it can't be uncommon. But then I look on BoxRec last week as I'm doing a story on him. Gabe, there are 137 Joe Smiths in the BoxRec database.
Holy shit.
And this guy literally came out of nowhere to beat Andrej Fonfara in Chicago, and then he ruined the farewell for Bernard Hopkins by knocking him out of the ring as an underdog again. That's the type of stuff that, like, you did what you weren't supposed to twice. And I know a lot of American entities are going to be pushing Terrence Crawford because, quite frankly, I think these awards are very biased geographically. Terrence Crawford had a very notable victory over Victor Postol. The problem is it was sandwiched in between two wins where he was a heavy, heavy favorite against Hank Lundy, who may or may not be a world-class 140, and John Molina, who I think was a hot mess that night. I know that these awards can be regionally biased, but if you give this award to Terrence Crawford over Carl Frampton, that is nothing more than American media bias. Gabe, moving on to fight of the year, I think there are some really good, solid contenders, but I still maintain on June 4th at the StubHub Center, Francisco Vargas, Orlando Salido, 36 minutes of savagery. I think that is by far the fight of 2016.
Yeah, ebb and flow, and just pure savagery. It's what boxing fans want. You want two guys to be within shooting distance of each other and to be letting their hands go all night, but you also want them to be able to take those punches so that the action could be sustained. And they worked up and down, in and out. There's just no question. That was a fight, like when I put together my list, and I started coming up with a lot of just kind of action fights. It didn't have huge implications, that fight was like, the first one I penciled in, you know, it was just like, okay, that fight, and then let's put the rest of the list together. It was also not a year of where I had many more names I could just throw down after that, you know, off the top of my head. It wasn't a huge year. I mean, White Chisora was another one that I put on my list. I thought that had tremendous ebb and flow. I like seeing heavyweights go at it like that and hurt each other and come back. That fight stuck out. Cadres Chocolatito was also a brutal long fight. Like I said, I think that might be his Margarito Cotto. I don't think Chocolatito will be the same after that fight. Do you have any others? How about Thomas Williams Jr., Edwin Rodriguez?
Yes, that certainly has to be given mention. Gabe, if I had a silver medalist, it would be Dillian White, Derek Chisora. I think that's the best pure 12-round heavyweight fight since Sergei Lyakovic took the WBO heavyweight title from Lehman Brewster a decade ago. I think Frampton Santa Cruz is perhaps the best PBC fight. I think the one fight that was given way too much credit because they actually get this through punches was Thurman Porter. And to me, people always have that debate about skill, and they say, well, there was such great defense. I look at it the other way. I thought it was bad offense. Anyone can athletically flail and throw punches and miss. I think it takes real skill to actually land. And if you don't think Vargas Salido had some skill, then, folks, you probably don't know what you're looking at. And I think Chuck Quadras certainly gets invited to the awards dinner. But Vargas Salido, I would say alongside White Chisora. Those are the two fights this year that I would keep on the DVR, or I keep a copy in terms of a DVD for future reference. I think those two far and away stood out in 2016. As for the knockout of the year, I do think that there were some really strong contenders and some real late candidates that got into the fray. Canelo getting starched by Khan. And then you had, obviously, Joe Smith against Bernard Hopkins, which is a real eye-opening or shocking end to a Hall of Fame career. Murat Gassiev just absolutely starching Jordan Schimmel with a single left hook. Then you had then you had Rashidi Ellis just lightning bolt out of nowhere against Eboy Gomez. But, Gabe, in terms of an eye-opening knockout, the one that really kind of stands out, I think, had to be Endam just icing Alfonso Blanco. I know it didn't have maybe the stakes or the platform. Not so sure what was a more striking, shocking KO than this one.
Well, shocking was the thing, was that it happened so fast, you know, and it was such a perfect right hand. Blanco, you know, didn't even see it coming, kind of turns. I love the camera angles because he takes the punch and then he kind of turns, and you can just see the lights go right out as he falls flat on his face. But how about Canelo versus Amir Khan? We all knew it was coming. We all knew Khan could be hurt and dropped and stopped, but he usually gets stopped standing on his feet. But that right hand that Canelo lands, Khan's head, it's like he just hits a light switch and he just is completely out. Mason Menard knocking out Yuri Bernardo in the third. I think it was like a right hand. It was just like out of nowhere, and dude's just straight-legged. But, you know, there's a lot of ways to get knocked out. And Curtside just bludgeoning Antoine Douglas into submission. It's just kind of like a workman-like, you know, TKO, stoppage along the ropes. That was another one. And, you know, Joe Smith knocking Hopkins out of the ring ain't no slouch. And Jezreel Corrales over Takashi Uchiyama. Actually, I thought that was pretty surprising that Uchiyama just could not handle his power from the awkward Corrales. So that was kind of a top of my list. But I think Smith versus Khan kind of did it for me aesthetically.
Gabe, I know you have some other awards here, like some things you want to get off your chest. Give us some of the other Montoyas for 2016.
Well, you know, what about Trainer of the Year? This isn't that easy of one. Shane McGuigan comes to mind, and Abel Sanchez. I mean, those are two. I don't know if there's any standouts, but I loved Abel Sanchez's performance with Denis Shapovalov, just absolutely taking him through hell and bringing him out the other side. I like the continued development of Gassiev. But McGuigan taking Carl Frampton through his big fights, like his two biggest fights of his career, and the way he did it and the ebb and flow of the fights and the adjustments of the fights, I felt he was Trainer of the Year. Who's your Promoter of the Year? Do you have one?
I think Eddie Hearn. And again, I know some British followers are going to cringe, and I can hear their groaning now. But if you want to talk about a company that consistently puts on big events that sell well and that resonate with the public, and you look at the roster of talent he has from Anthony Joshua on down, who's had a better run than him?
Yeah, Eddie Hearn. I mean, it's just big. Frampton versus Quigg, Golovkin. He rolled the dice with the Brook fight and lost and probably knew he was going to lose, but it was a huge event. And what he's done with Anthony Joshua, I mean, the guy's a superstar already, and he's yet to really have that crowning glory. But here they are going to roll the dice to, you know, get the title. Now they're going to roll the dice to get the credibility with the Klitschko fight, at least get that scalp. But also, you know, you talked about Fighter of the Year. Joe Smith, boxing has overused the Rocky storyline or the Cinderella Man storyline so damn much when it doesn't even always apply. But here's a guy that basically, you know, I don't want to say his first opponent of the year, the club fighter, was Spider Rico. But, I mean, he was fighting in a club fight, and then he ends up, you know, beating a guy from far out of nowhere in spectacular fashion. Because that's important, too, not just winning, but how you win. And then knocks Hopkins out of the ring. I mean, just on feel alone, you could argue that guy's Fighter of the Year. But I didn't really have that many more. What about Prospects of the Year?
You know, it's interesting. Some of the guys that I've liked for a while, I now consider them young contenders, whether it's Sergey Lipinets, who's in line for a title, Errol Spence, who I believe is now a top five or six welterweight in the world, who certainly passes the eye test. I think a lot of the prospects that I like, Gabe, they're under 12 fights, so I don't know what to think about them. I mean, I see a bushel full of them with a Golden Boy promotion shows, either at Belasco Theater at Fantasy Springs, whether it's Edgar Valerio, whether it's Hector Tanahara, whether it's Gomez, whether it's Cesar Diaz or Virgil Ortiz. But, Gabe, guess what? They don't have enough work where I could say, you know what, I think you're a real prospect. As of right now, they're just fledgling prize fighters. I think we're kind of in a transition stage as it relates to who is a prospect. I know one guy that I like, I guess he still fits that description as prospect, and I really like his upside and I like his overall skill set. I think Jarrett Swift-Hurd is a guy that I've liked from the first time I saw him back last November when he beat Galarza.
Yeah, that guy is definitely on the list. I mean, I think that's what it is. We're in that period. I haven't quite found that guy that I just have to watch. Luis Nieri comes to mind.
Yes.
It's a guy that just seems very exciting every time, a little flawed and a southpaw, which is always my favorite. But, you know, do you call a guy with 22 wins and, you know, 16 knockouts, no losses, a prospect? I mean, he's kind of entering in that Andy Vences place. Oh, yeah, a little bit higher because Andy has fewer wins. But he picked up, 130-pound title, the WBC Continental Americas. He's 17-0, 10 knockouts. And I see what a hard worker he is up here, Andy. Works with his trainer, Gabe Flores, out of the Central Valley. And they travel all over the place for the best sparring. And I think that guy is one to watch. I did a video interview I put out yesterday with him. He said he overshot the weight in the Casey Ramos fight, and he got a little nervous because of the title shot. And I think he came in 2 pounds under the limit and only rehydrated like 4 pounds or 5 pounds above the limit. And he just kind of screwed it up, got off protocol. But he'll be, I think, have a breakout year next year. I don't know about Jason Quigley. I want to be proven. I was high on him, not as high on him. I just kind of put him on that list. Diego De La Hoya, I think, is real. Jose Ramirez Jr., I think, is a real draw. And I think he's got depth, but I don't know if he's got all the tools to go all the way. So those are guys I'm just looking at.
Right. And another guy that I've mentioned for a long time, Joseph Diaz. And again, people say, Steve, can you exclude him? Well, I think he's graduated. Gabe, he's now in line to be in a box off for an elimination bout to fight for the WBC title. So at this point, I say, hey, this is a young, legitimate contender. Moving on, Gabe, some of the big storylines of 2016, you had Canelo handing over the WBC belt to Gennady Golovkin. You had the uncertain status of the PBC, the continued decline of the pay-per-view market, and the return of Richard Schaefer. What storyline will you best remember 2016 for?
I think the PBC not panning out has been really interesting. It's kind of ongoing. The insurance thing, I feel like maybe I need to go back and reread more of Tom Hauser's piece. It's just so damn dry. That storyline, why that happened, who's behind it, that's intriguing to me. But the return of Richard Schaefer, I think, is the thing that I'll be keeping an eye on the most. That came out of 2016 and will be an ongoing story. I always kind of like say, you know, watch what somebody does as opposed to what they say. And what he's always said, well, I'm out of boxing. And then going back to that interview with Radio Raheem from last year when he was still supposed to be out of the game, but we're all wondering what integrative sports was and how involved he was and how out of the game he really was. I still think Oscar's got a suit here that I think, you know, Richard may have violated their agreement because he was saying that he was an advisor to Al Haymon. And then now here he is with Ringstar Promotion saying he's an independent, and yet his first show is with Al Haymon. That's a guy I want to keep an eye on. So
yeah, let's just listen, out of his own mouth, I am not doing all PBC shows. Okay, let's track that then. You said it. You stated it. We'll track it.
Well, and here's another facet of it, too. And I think this is really a story that I think is untold. Is what happened with the drug testing in Julian Williams versus Jermall Charlo? And why was that fight postponed? For nobody gave a reason. They said it was his eye. Did we get confirmation on that? We don't know. And did it surgery? It was like LASIK surgery. Did it really need all that time? And why wasn't there drug testing? Richard Schaefer's involved. He started drug testing in the sport. What the hell happened with that fight? I just really wonder about it. So that's all I got to say on that.
And, Gabe, the PBC, I thought, had a very, very interesting year. Literally, guys like Lamont Peterson did not fight. In fact, most of their fighters in the second half of the year were waiting around for a fight and told to wait till 2017, and we're hearing about some of these dates being filled in, like Yuri Foreman against Arizlande Lara, which I'm sure we're all going to be camped out for that one. Gabe, I thought that was an interesting storyline that instead of taking over boxing, most of their fighters got sidelined. This cannot be what many of them signed up for.
Yeah, whatever happened to Peter Quillen? You know, I mean, why didn't Danny Jacobs fight so often? I mean, Peter's now hasn't fought in over a year, you know, and that's not a good thing when I'm seeing him in social media more than I'm seeing him in the ring. You know, I don't even see him train on social media. Chavez Jr. is in better shape. But you know, what happened to Lamont Peterson? What's that career? And you, when you sign up this many fighters and you're spend more time hiding your structure than having a structure, this is what happens. You know, the PBC in 2016, it looks like a total failure. All the major networks know a shitty show when they see it. They usually are able to cancel it. But instead, you know, they shift all the schedule to next year and hope for the best. Hope Al has a better product, a better show next year. You know, we'll see if it makes it to 2018.
Well, it's making a very good 2017 for Showtime. They're going to get the lion's share of the quality matchups on that side of the street for one reason. They're writing a check. Everyone else cashed one and have basically given up quality control. You know, it'll be interesting to see where the Premier Boxing Champions goes in the following upcoming 12 to 16 months. Gabe, in 2017, yes or no, gut feel, do we get Golovkin-Canelo?
I think we do. September.
Agreed.
Maybe, or end of the year. Probably end of the year. Something will happen, and it's got to be a Christmas gift. I don't know. What do you think?
I think everyone's on the spot, specifically Golden Boy, who's made it crystal clear. We're going to fight him in September. Okay. So that's why I don't even make that big of a big deal about the Chavez fight. As long as it does not preclude the fight that everybody wants, fight whoever you want. Don't care. September, third weekend, I hope to be somewhere watching Golovkin take on Canelo. Of course, with the caveat that they each win their subsequent fights. But, Gabe, do you think we'll see Mayweather-Pacquiao, the return?
God, not if I see them first. Turn around and run the other way. I don't know. That's a good question. Floyd says he's 160 now. So he may have problems getting back down to 147. He might be dehydrated. I don't know. I think he's retired. He just seems more and more like he's retired. So I'm going to put that wish into the air because, you know, I don't know if pay-per-view can survive it. Can we now just admit that pay-per-view isn't for the best fights necessarily? The fights that are just busting at the regular cable seams and just need to go pay-per-view, but really that they're to make sure that HBO doesn't blow their budget on shitty fights or overpriced fights?
I mean, Gabe, I said it today in my article. I don't blame HBO for passing on Cotto Kirkland. I don't want Miguel Cotto, who I call the Puerto Rican Mamba, because that last contract reminds me of Kobe Bryant's deal with the Lakers. And, again, no one forced anyone to offer that deal. If you were Miguel Cotto, we'd all take that deal. We wouldn't leave that money on the table. So with that said, if I'm HBO and Peter Nelson, we all know what's being rumored and bandied about in terms of what Miguel Cotto makes on his current minimum with the SS Rock Nation, which has hit more icebergs than the Titanic. Well, if you want to keep an association because of Beyonce and Jay-Z, okay, you have to put it on HBO pay-per-view. All right, listen, you can all have an opinion about that. But if Peter Nelson made the decision that, hey, we're going to use like a third of our budget or more for that fight, that's an impeachable offense as far as I'm concerned. I don't know what to say about that, and I pointed this out in my column today on UCN Live. As much as we don't like pay-per-view and how inconvenient and cost-prohibited it is, Gabe, it is still the most democratic way of selling a fight. If you like it, you purchase it. If not, you make other arrangements. That's
no
simple.
Doubt. I couldn't agree more. And I think it's also it's the one place, but you know, besides the gate, and maybe you know with cable, but it's harder to track. Like that, people aren't you know buying cable for the boxing. So we can really just say, no, I don't want this fight. I think this fight sucks. I'm not paying for it. And show the promoters what it is that they should be doing. You know, boxing fans need to understand that simple idea that you got to hit them in their wallets. You know. I mean, because I don't think everybody lives and dies on the gate, but they certainly, you know, with pay-per-view, they need you to buy it. So it just makes sense. You know,
by the way, speaking of HBO, we're in the last week of 2016. Basically, everyone in boxing is closing their offices, regrouping to the first week of January to get back to business. As of now, this is a fact. It's not an opinion. I'm not making any judgments. However, Gabe, Showtime right now, I know when I'm watching their network for boxing, they have a very strong slate of fights. I like it, okay? I'm looking forward to that stuff. HBO, on their regular airwaves, which I pay for every month, outside of January 28th, has nothing scheduled. I don't even know what to say at this point.
Yeah, what's going to happen first? They're going to announce a good fight or Donald Trump's going to have a press conference? I don't understand what is going on. But, I mean, now that they've got their pay-per-view schedule with Cotto Kirkland announced, let's get to work. But, you know, I imagine, you know, the first week or so, everybody's going to come back to work and at least something's going to happen. But, I mean, have you heard of anything really like exciting on the horizon? I mean,
well,
or is it just dead silence?
I spoke with Bob Arum last week, and he says that the Vasyl Lomachenko Orlando Salido rematch, he believes that's going to happen in March, either in LA, hopefully, or Las Vegas. Mm. He's going to talk to HBO about it. Also, a doubleheader with a couple of his young champions, Gilberto Zurdo Ramirez and Oscar Valdez, might take place in March, either in Mexico or maybe in Tucson, Arizona. He will be talking to HBO about that. But again, that's only two other dates. I want to see some fights. If you look at my article today on UCN Live, most of the stuff that you're really looking forward to on that side of the street is going to cost you another $70. That's the reality. And I understand there are circumstances at play, but as I like to say, to quote Bill Belichick, it is what it is. Let's go to the Twitter timeline here. If you want to chime in, you could do so at SteveUCNLive and at Gabriel_Montoya. We go to the president, Andrew V. Kennedy. What are the chances of Kovalev War 2 not happening? Also, are those GGG tickets really moving well? Seems that there are a lot left. Well, I mean, considering the fact that tickets only went on sale Saturday, I don't think that's a surprise. They also raised the ticket prices, but Jim Boone can fill us in on that later. Gabe, your opinion, Kovalev War 2, do we see it next year?
I think at the end of the year, something. Yeah, it's hard to say with Andre Ward. I mean, you know, he never met a contract he liked. So is he going to honor the rematch clause? I guess he has to. Just how long does he make us wait for the fight? How much money do you think is on the table? And we don't even know the details of his contract. Does his pay double? Does their contract get worse for him? Who knows? Can Rock Nation, do they want to still be in the boxing business? I don't know what's going on with them. So, I mean, they're going to be taking a hit with Cotto right off the bat in Kirkland, and then they're going to have to figure out how to pay Ward whatever he thinks is a reasonable fee. God, I wouldn't want to be them next year.
Well, just keep this in mind. That pay-per-view did well under $200,000. So when people say how much money is there, not much. Just do the math. Here's a tweet from the greatest. If Canelo fights Junior, Chavez Junior, doesn't a big guy that only knows how to pressure prepare Cinnamon for Golovkin? Yeah, except that I think Golovkin technically and fundamentally and conceptually is much better than Chavez. But from a size and strength perspective, I think an argument can be made on that, yes. But I don't think it's a great comparison top to bottom.
No, I mean, Chavez Jr. is Gennady Golovkin's picture of Dorian Gray, you know. The better Golovkin gets, like, the worse Chavez Jr. gets. I just think dealing with a big guy who's going to pressure, who's got power, that's the thing I think you're going to at least deal with, is the strength and the punch, you know, because a guy can whack at 160, at 164, he's going to be sapped a bit, or 165, whatever they make it. But I don't think it's a bad fight for him. I mean, how do you prepare for Gennady Golovkin? Who would you face in order to set yourself up for that?
Yeah, that's the whole thing. And you want to do big business. You have a very big minimum to dole out if you're Golden Boy. So you have to pick a guy that's better known than Liam Smith. Say what you want. And I'm not telling anyone to dislike or to approve a fight. Chavez Canelo does big business wherever it's placed. It's the reality. And here's boxing axiom 101. Boxing is a business. Here's a tweet from Orlando Ortiz. Any updates on the undercard of Golovkin and Jacobs? Why not have Spence versus Porter on it? Well, that's a PBC fight, and there's a budget, and that's playing fantasy boxing. Gabe, I'm getting the sense, and I think you agree with me based on your comment you made about 10 minutes ago. Roman Gonzalez, he doesn't want to get near Quadras again. I mean, some of these comments that I'm listening to, and I get it, you get to demand anything you want financially. You're the one getting in there. You're the one taking the punches. It was a very tough fight the first time. You getting the sense it was a little bit too tough for the taste of Chocolatito?
Yeah, I'm thinking, you know, and I mean, man, imagine if you're Chocolatito, your choice is, you know, or Estrada or Quadras, or, you know, again, like, man, it's only going to get harder from here, you know? That's the problem with, you know, mainstream boxing, like HBO boxing. They discover these little guys when they're kind of at the end of it, instead of being along for the ride and really seeing all the greatness. I mean, we're going to see the greatness now because he's going to get really challenged. But, you know, I mean, Joe Goosen told me that long ago for the Pacquiao-Floyd Mayweather negotiations. You can price yourself out or create an obstacle that no one can get around, or feign injury. Those are the ways to get out of a fight.
Here's a question from Max Samuel. Now, he's actually a guy coming over from England. I met him last year at the Lemieux-Golovkin fight. He says, important question regarding Triple G versus Jacobs. What time does the pre-gaming start at Jimmy's Barbecue? Now, this is not Jimmy's Corner. This is the barbecue joint right across the street from the famed Madison Square Garden. Max, I would say preliminarily, and we're about 3 months out, that undercard starts at 9 p.m., the televised portion. I would get there around 5-ish and have an ice-cold Guinness waiting for me on tap. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598 at the top of the hour. We'll have Mr. KO Tickets, Jim Boone, talking about ticket sales for Golovkin Jacobs and the rest of the upcoming boxing schedule. Gabe, let's get to the phone lines.
If I'm not mistaken, this is Mike from Queens. You're live on the Next Round.
Hello, Mike.
You there? 347?
Yes, we are.
347. Not that.
I heard him.
Briefly. All right, we'll jump up to a number I absolutely know. Who is Ringside Robbie? You're live on the Next Round.
Yeah, hello, guys. I hope you enjoyed your holiday. I don't disagree with you guys on a lot of your choices, but to me, maybe I'm on planet delusional here, but I think Joe Smith checks several boxes: knockout of the year, fighter of the year, and absolute story of the year. That's a clean sweep in all three of those categories.
Robbie, can I tell you something? I tweeted this last week. I think it's either Frampton or Smith, and I don't think you're completely off base. And if you said to me, Steve, I'm going with Joe Smith, I would not have a strong disagreement.
Well, that's why I called in Steve last week and wondered what his next step was going to be, because the boxing people, especially those that start boxing, can't really ignore what this guy's accomplished. You have to reward him for what he's done, you know.
Well, and it's fighter of the year. It's not boxer of the year, you know.
Yeah.
He really does exemplify a fighter, you know, just comes out of nowhere. And everybody kind of downgrades the guy. They treat him like he's really crude, and he's not that crude, you know. I mean, he is just like Harold Letterman said, a power puncher. He's coming in there to knock you out, hit you with everything. But I think there could be wrinkles added to the game, and he's still young. But, boy, he can kick, man. And, yeah, to knock Bernard Hopkins out of the ring like that, is that the knockout of the year for you, or is it the Fanfara knockout?
Oh, well, how do you separate the two? I think the one that really takes the cake is seeing Bernard land on his head at the Forum, you know. But, I mean, both of them, I mean, can you imagine if you went to the sports book before the Fanfara fight and you laid the 15-1 odds, you know, how you'd be sitting today? You know, I mean, this personifies, say, a Rocky kind of story. I know that gets overused, but realistically, in our lifetime, how many times have we seen somebody come out of nowhere and not only beat somebody once, but they knock off two top-notch, well-known people in one division? I mean, Fanfara had already gotten a title shot. There was talk of him being in line for a rematch with Stevenson. And what does this guy do? He comes in and just cleans his clock. And then Bernard Hopkins takes the advice of Mr. ESPN himself, Dan Rayfield, and he calls Joe Smith up and says, okay, you're the selection. And, well, guess what he got for his Christmas gift? You know? I mean...
Robbie, I spoke to Joe DiGuardia last week. I did a story on Joe Smith's situation for UCN Live, and it's clear that they've been the B-side for much of 2016. They understand what they have, a very marketable young man, and they're going to treat him now as an A-side. They're going to try to build upon this. April 29th at the newly refurbished Nassau Coliseum, former home of the New York Islanders, word to Mike Bossy. April 29th, they're going to reopen their doors for a boxing card, and there's been a lot of talk of a Strong Island showdown, which I believe will do a lot of business between Joe Smith and Shawnee Monahan. I would put my own money, which I don't have a lot, that's the direction they'd like to go.
Well, it's ironic because remember last week, Steve, I called up and said, well, what do you think about Monahan and Smith being on the undercard of Golovkin and Jacobs? I do think that that's the next fight for him, and I think stylistically it's a perfect kind of fight. I've seen Monahan fight. You know, he's a decent fighter, but I'm more impressed with what Joe Smith has accomplished, and I think that would be a perfect fight, and that would be an early candidate, by the way, stylistically, for fight of the year in 2017, in my opinion.
No question.
Interesting. Anything else there, Robbie?
I totally agree. Vargas Salido is definitely fight of the year, but I know these boxing writers are probably going to hand it to Terrence Crawford, which is ridiculous. If they've got to give an award other than that fight, pay attention to the heavyweights that fought in Britain. That was, you know, from what I hear, that was a hell of a fight. So, but that's all I've got. Happy New Year to you guys, and we'll see you next week if you're on. If not,
Robbie, we'll probably take a short hiatus and start off on the second week of January. But thank you for calling in and listening throughout the year, Robbie. It's very appreciated.
Yeah, you're welcome,
yeah.
Guys. Take care.
Thank you very much. If you want to call in, let us know. What are some of your year-end awards? Also, which pay-per-views that are lined up for next year? Which ones are you purchasing? Let us know. 347-215-7598. Gabe Montoya, Steve Kim here on episode 611 of The Next Round.
Robbie makes a really strong case for Joe Smith. It's true. I mean, he could run the trifecta, but I think people will strangely give it to Vassell, or they'll give it to Terrence Crawford and ignore Carl Frampton. 860, you're live on the next round.
Hey, how you guys doing? CT.
CT, welcome aboard.
Hey, yeah, I pretty much agree with you. What you're saying. I think Frampton definitely gets Fighter of the Year based on him unifying a title against a prime fighter like himself and going up to the next weight class with his first shot at the title, facing another prime fighter in his prime and get a title in that weight class as well. He's got to get Fighter of the Year, in my opinion. Also, Fighter of the Year is definitely Vargas Toledo, just great action, you know, going back and forth. Both guys are taking very hard shots throughout the fight. I'm surprised neither one of them went down, but a very entertaining fight. Loved it. Also, I know it wasn't, but to me, on a technical standpoint, I really enjoyed the fight between Coleman and Easter Jr. I think that was a good fight as well.
Yes, agreed. CT, quick question. You are a boxing consumer. Have you made up your mind which pay-per-views you're going to be purchasing that are lined up for the next year?
Definitely older than Triple G and Jacobs fight, for sure.
Okay.
Also, I know you guys talked about Jared Hurd earlier. I think he should be Prospect of the Year as well. And I heard he's also going to be fighting if Jermall Charlo goes up in weight. I heard that he's going to fight Tony Harrison for the vacant title if Jermall Charlo steps up.
That's a good fight. I think that is a battle of two very talented 54-pounders. Now, Harrison's already been dented, and we kind of know what flaws he has. But for Jared Hurd, I still think that represents the best matchup that he's had thus far in his professional career.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what he does next year. He's like you said, Steve, though, there isn't a whole hell of a lot of them prospects, and it is kind of a developmental time for everybody. Just like looking at all the rosters, Golden Boy's roster is young. Top-ranked shot rosters young. It's going to be
a transitional phase. Yeah, it's like? It's like in baseball when a lot of these guys move up from AAA to the major leagues. Now they're young major leaguers, and all your best prospects are in rookie or A-ball. So you don't always have to have an award for boxing the way I look at it.
That's very true.
Also, next year, if they could get, I'm really thinking these fighters should definitely get a title shot within next year. Errol Spence and Felix Diaz. I really want to see those two definitely, get their shots that they deserve for next year if they could. And,
Errol Spence, CT, I believe is mandated as the mandatory challenger for Kell Brook, and I think that'd be an absolute gem of a fight. And once again, those dastardly sanctioning bodies at it again. Anyway.
One more other thing. I definitely think the end knockout should be knockout of the year. I'm kind of torn in between the two because, his knockout reminds me of the Sergio Martinez knockout of Paul Williams in a sense, the way, his opponent landed on his face. And with the Canelo knockout of Khan, kind of reminds me of the Pacquiao knockout of Hatton. Kind of, the way Khan is knocked out with his eyes open, just breathing heavily, it's kind of like the same sense reminds that it's the name of the two knockouts as I was mentioning, but I'm going to go with end down. It was a hard shot to the temple, and the guy just sliding on his face.
CT, you have been heard. Again, thank you for calling throughout the year, CT. You have a great New Year's, okay?
Thank you. You too.
Gabe, I know who your prospect of the year isn't. Jared Goff. Boy, you are down on him, Gabe. Jeez. Already off that bandwagon, huh? What did I tell you, Gabe?
I was never on the Jared Goff bandwagon. I'm having some sort of horrible difficulty with my computer, and I don't know what to do about it. But I'm going to actually go see the Rams next week, so I'm going to be off.
I'm sorry.
I know.
That's your
problem. I'm a little worried. I'm a little worried about it, But it's funny. It's like the thing I decided to do at the beginning of the year. I was like, Dad, we're gonna have, the Rams are gonna be back. We got to get tickets. We've been waiting 20 years for this, and then the season happens. And I show up here to Palm Desert like 2 days ago, and we want to see the Niners game. We're all stoked. Let's get a victory over the Niners for Christmas. And sure enough, you know, the Niners come back in the last couple of minutes, the Rams go all Rams on us, and Goff throws an interception. I don't know. What do you think of him for the year?
I never liked him. I thought he was a complete system guy. I did not understand why you needed to give a king's ransom to trade up the way you did. I mean, think about it. The Rams don't even have a first-round pick. I'm just like, I don't know if he's any more of a prospect than Sean Mannion, who I actually like. So it'll be interesting to see how he develops. Whoever that next coach is, he better be an offensive guru or better bring one in like a Norv Turner. Cool. Gabe, can we hit the phone lines or are we still snafu'd here? Okay.
No, I fixed it. I fixed it. 347, you're live on the next round. 347?
Mike!
What's up, guys?
Oh, Mike,
what's
you're
up,
there.
Man?
Welcome to the next round.
Yeah. What's up, guys? Sorry about that before. I was having problems with my phone.
Oh. Hey, no worries. I was having problems with my computer.
Okay. Good, good. All right. I thought Joe Smith was a Al Heyman guy, no?
No. According to – if he was an Al Heyman guy, think about it. His last fight was with Golden Boy and HBO. Previous fight was on PBC, but Joe DiGuardia says, Steve, we have no options or obligations to anybody.
Oh, because I thought he wouldn't have gotten the Funfair fight if he wasn't an Al Heyman guy, and I figured they thought he'd lose to Hopkins like Amir lost to Canelo like.
Well, unless Joe
DiGuardia
is lying
to
me, but you know what I think, Mike? I think Funfair and that crew thought so little of Joe Smith they didn't even get options.
And what Funfair had done since then.
Yeah.
Just crazy. Okay, what else do I have questions about? Any chance of a good undercard for any of these pay-per-views coming up or no?
You know, track record says no. There's a budget. You know, listen, when was the last time we really had a good undercard? I mean, where have you gone, Revenge, the rematches? I think now undercards are reduced to showcase fights and Yandel, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, I actually think Cotto Canelo. I mean, Cotto versus Kirkland's not a bad fight, especially with what's her name's going to be training Kirkland. I think that's going to be a good fight in the ring. But I mean, is it worth pay per view money? I don't know. I don't think so. But if you put a good undercard in it, I think you get more buys. But
well, you already have Guillermo Rigondeaux.
Well,
yeah. See, guys.
Do you think Ann Wolf can get him there?
Gabe,
you know,
if I'm Ann Wolf, if I'm a realist, which I think she is, she doesn't have to admit this, but I would tell James Kirkland, and my game plan would be, you got 9 to 12 minutes. We're going to make this a 3 or 4 round sprint. Just
yeah.
Do a kamikaze job and let's see where it goes. I think that's the only way they could win is to jump them early and see what happens.
Yeah, what
yeah.
do you have to lose?
Absolutely, and that's the way you know, you can't change your character now and try to box with Miguel Cotto.
Right.
Yeah, you know, you go out there and go beastly. What's the full weight for this, right? Is 153?
It's 153, and Mike Miller, the attorney who negotiated this for Kirkland, gave me a great line when I said, why is it 153? And he said it dead serious. He said, well, Steve, because they wanted 152, and I had to get that other pound. So there's the latest edition of the Cotto weight.
Wow.
Yeah, that's why. That's the only reason why.
It's just ridiculous, but if it – think of Cotto hasn't fought since against Canelo, who was a year and a half ago, especially you still got 2 more months to the fight. I mean, you got to jump on him, right?
You know, I mentioned this in my story today. Guys, can you recall a pay-per-view where the two combatants didn't fight the previous calendar year?
Unbelievable.
No.
Just, yeah, cash grab.
I can't think of it.
Does Cotto get to, like, stab him in the dressing room and then Kirkland has to walk out being chased by a pit bull or two as well? Just guys throwing, you know, knives at him and shit. And then he gets in the ring and fights Cotto.
Yeah, Ed might just have pit bulls follow James to the ring. That might be in the training tactic. I don't know.
No one's scarier than Ann Wolf. He's all settled, you know.
Yeah. Wolf is a great last name, by the way.
The Wolf Ann. Be wary.
Yeah.
What else was I going to ask, guys? I'm just forgetting, man. I'm sorry. Fuck. Is there any chance for Rios Ortiz? Is that real? Or?
Oh, I think it's going to happen. I believe it'll happen the first week of February.
Really?
Yes, I've heard that it's basically a done deal.
February.
Both fighters are preparing for it. They're looking for a venue. Guys, I'm just relaying information. First week of February, I'm told that everyone's preparing for it. Got to look for a building.
Yeah, I'd buy that. I'd buy that on the pay-per-view.
I'm all over that.
That needs a 24/7.
Who do you got in that? You got to go Rios, right?
If it goes past three rounds, I go Rios. Absolutely. So, Mike, did you get your ticket for March 18th?
Not yet, but I'm definitely going to get it soon. I thought it was only a pre-sale, and I figured...
No, the tickets are on sale now. They went on sale Saturday.
Oh, okay, then I'm definitely going to get them right now as soon as I get off the phone. And what else questions I have for you guys? Lamont Peterson, any update on him? Because I knew he was supposed to fight Cotto, but where does he go now? Is he back from Bolivia or...
I think he's got a fight scheduled in February or March. I forget against who, and quite frankly, at this point, I don't even give a damn.
Yeah, it's just what a wasted of a career.
But well, that's what he asked for, you know. So, all right, Mike, listen, thank you for the patronage. We'll talk to you next year.
No problem, guys. Be good.
347-215-7598 at the top of the hour, Mr. KO Tickets Jim Boone joins us. Gabe?
Let me ask you this now that I'm not completely panicking about my computer. Who would you get for the Rams coach? Who do you think that's gettable?
Wow. You know who I like? And he's done a great job. And again, he has a lot of players. I think Shanahan's son in Atlanta. I look at that Atlanta offense, and again, he's not going to be able to bring Julio Jones or Matt Ryan and those two good running backs. But you got to get a guy. I mean, look, I don't know football. I'm just an observer. I just give opinions. But when people who have played football, including Todd Gurley, say we're running a middle school offense, you better get someone that actually can run at least a college offense.
Yeah, there was plays going on even yesterday, you know, or even with the day before yesterday with the Rams Niners. I don't understand what's going on out there. And all year long with Fisher, he just calls sequences of plays that just didn't make any sense. I don't know about John Gruden. Harbaugh would be fine with me. Somebody that's going to lure a big-time receiver to us, because just being in L.A. and being the Rams ain't going to get that done.
You better draft one, okay, because Isaac Holton, Torrey Holton, Isaac Bruce, they ain't walking through that door, and they severely overpaid for poor man's Oz Hakeem and Tavon Austin. But, again, their checkbook, not mine. Gabe, let's go back to the phone lines.
Let's see, blocked number, you are live on the next round. It's kind of the blog talk equivalent of Tom Bob Anderson. 281, you're live on the next round. 281.
Hey, guys, this is Nate.
Nate, welcome aboard.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, what's up?
Good.
What's on your mind?
I have a story for you guys. I have to share this.
Please do.
I'm driving down the street in Southwest Houston the other day, and I drive up on this van, and there's this big mural of a what looks like a boxer on it, but I don't really recognize him. And then I get up to the side of the van, and there's a bigger picture of the guy, and it says Arislandi Lara.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm like, what? Of all the boxers in the world, right? I'm like,
doesn't he live in Houston though? He does live in Houston, right? Training out there with Ronnie Shields.
That's what I was thinking, that he trained with Shields, so I guess he must be around here. But I'm like, Arislandi Lara? I mean, the guy nobody wants to see, or if you name 25 boxers, he's not going to be one of them.
Name 250, he may not be one of them, let's be honest.
How does he drive? Does he go like a block and then go backwards a block and then forward a block again?
Whoa, Gabe. Wow, Gabe, you went there. Jeez.
And I don't know. Jeez. I just went right on by. Oh,
that's hilarious.
Oh, man.
Somebody's promoting him, right?
Yeah, I guess so, man.
So, Nate, what stood out for you this past year of boxing, if anything?
Well, you know, I for me, I say there is no fighter of the year because I just don't see any of them have been active enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, like Crawford, you know, that was a big fight with Postol, but I was never that big on Postol in the first place, and that by itself, I mean, you know, what else is there? And I think just not enough activity. So I say no fighter of the year. That's my thing. The KO
okay.
of the year, I'm thinking Endom, but you know one you guys didn't mention was Padonna Stevenson here a couple months ago. Who was that he was fighting?
Oh, Thomas Williams.
Yeah. That was pretty brutal in the end.
Yeah, actually that was. I have to go back now and watch that. I didn't come immediately to mind, but there were some good knockouts this year. That was kind of probably my favorite part of putting together the list. There was some dudes just got drilled and put out pretty fast this year. The Amir Khan Canelo knockout, though, it's like a video game.
Yeah, that and Mason Menard both ways.
Yeah. He
giveth
and he taketh.
Yeah. Fight of the year, for me, they got to mean a little something, too. So I'm kind of on the Chocolatito quadrant.
Okay.
For getting that. I just, you know, and watching it, I was, you know, our HBO crew just wasn't giving, I don't think, quadrants enough credit. I mean, because as much as Chocolatito did hit him, he never really hurt him. He never really moved him. And looking in the other way, man, Chocolatito's face was...
I've never seen it so banged up.
Yeah.
Never seen it so banged up, and I just really, really doubt. Does he want round 13? You know,
doesn't seem like it. I can get with that as fight of the year. I mean, because yeah, there was a lot on the line, and it was really high level stuff, and there was definitely good give and take. And I just wonder if it's a step too far for Chocolatito. We'll see what he does in the new year. I mean, is HBO interested in any sort of interim fight for him, or is this we got to go straight back to this?
I'm being told that they're telling Chocolatito, if you don't want to fight Quadras, I guess you're going back to Japan on a smaller fight. You know, again, listen, fighters can negotiate however they want. They can negotiate themselves in a fight or into another opportunity. It's their choice, but the game will move on.
Yeah, I'm not that big on immediate rematches, even when there's controversy. I'd rather see both fighters, you know, fight one or two more fights and then fight again. You know, even like Kovalev Ward, you know, I'd rather they fought in between. But if you say that about Ward, it might be 3 years before we see the rematch.
Right.
I love that thing. He's threatening to retire, and my response is, promise?
So here's a question for you. Not really exactly prospect, but, you know, better be if I watched the highlights of the whole fight from the other day.
Oh, against Prieto. He just blew through that guy. Ooh, that's a durable guy. His power is real. There's no doubt about that.
But, I mean, what are we going to see him, like once a year? I mean, I want to see more of that guy, but he's a PBC guy, right?
Yeah, but I think he's pretty far up the sanctioning body rankings. I forgot which one. He's in line for a title shot sooner rather than later.
I hope we get to see him, that guy. I want to see him get hit, too, and see how he handles that.
Yeah, that's the one thing we don't know, Nate. So, you know.
So
anything else on your mind, Nate?
Well, I'll tell you, the pay-per-views, there's – no, I mean, as entertaining as it might be, there's no way I'd pay for Cotto and Kirkland. It's just, you know, it's just not a pay-per-view fight. And Triple G, yeah, you know, you've got to. And if Canelo and Junior actually happens, you'd have to pay me to watch that one.
Pay you to watch it. Pay two of you. Okay.
Yeah. I'm sorry, man. Junior,
great.
I already had my entertainment when Fanfara knocked him out, and that's enough.
Okay.
You know,
all right. Well, Nate, listen, have a great New Year's.
All right. You too, guys.
All right, man.
All right.
Take care.
we have gone through the first hour. We're going to be here for at least another 30 minutes, the year-end edition of the next round for 2016. But joining us right now on the championship hotline, giving us the scoop and the skinny on the ticket market in the sport of boxing, Mr. KO Tickets, Jim Boone. Boone.
Hello.
Jimmy, welcome aboard. Thank you for joining us. This is the question I think everyone wants me to ask you. How are tickets for Golovkin-Jacobs moving, and what should be the plan of attack for those wanting to purchase tickets before March 18th?
Well, full disclosure, I'm on the outside looking in. I do not have the deal with K2. That being said, from what I can tell, it's, tickets are definitely selling for it. And if you want to go to the fight, and this is definitely the fight that you want to see, the Garden, New York City, St. Paddy's Day weekend, I mean, Golovkin, I mean, what else do you want to see? This is it in boxing to start the year off. I would say there's some really good deals out there right now as far as what they're offering you direct out of Ticketmaster. You don't have to pay a broker yet. But I believe if you wait, it's gonna get you in the end, because I do think this will be a monster sellout. And the way it's trending right now, in my opinion, it's going to be a very, very successful show for everybody involved.
Jim, I know the ticket prices are hyped. This is the way things go. As fighters get more popular, they fight bigger fights. Ticket prices become increasingly more expensive. With that said, did you like the price of the tickets? Did you like the structuring of the house from K2?
Steve, I was a little surprised if they had the entry level at $100. That being said, I still think it is worth it. And like we've talked about time and time again, the most important thing is if they're going to price them at $100, sell them at $100. And like you reported, they're committed to selling 5,000 seats at that price, which is fine. They got a $200 lower level seat, which is a lot of bang for the buck for the, you know, for the consumer. And then you have the high level seat at $1,000, but it's almost like Loeffler has been listening to the show, because what have I said? It's like $1,000 ringside. That makes sense. I understand it. But you can't have a $1,000 riser, and he did not do that. The best risers, the 107s, the dead centers, the best seats in the house, in my opinion, those are $600. So I think he scaled it properly. It might not, you know, go through the roof right out of the gate, but give it time. Trust me, this thing will be a monster once we get to March. It's going to be a full house, and it, like I said, they're going to do a real good job on it.
Gabe?
So Garcia Thurman, when it's, you know, a venue and everything's announced, do I got to get in early, or how do you think that's going to go?
Is this serious?
No, it's not at all.
Gabe, I mean, they've talked about this fight since, I mean, how long, when was this fight announced?
Late October.
Yeah,
late October,
I mean,
early November. Do they have a venue yet?
I don't understand. I mean, if they can't get a venue to pick that up, I think that kind of says something about the whole state of the PBC right now. I mean, it's like, it is Broner fighting? I thought that was a done deal, too. Where the only fight they have out there is fight in Toledo, the Robert Easter fight. So I don't know what they're doing. It's bizarre, to say the least.
Well, they got, I mean, I don't know, I mean, it's Showtime, but the Frampton-Santa Cruz rematch.
No,
Grand.
That is correct. And I don't think it's a disaster. I think they're selling tickets for it. But, I mean, that is a very, very good weekend in Las Vegas, in the sense that it's the weekend before, obviously, is NFC-AFC Championship. The weekend after is very expensive with the Super Bowl as far as hotel rooms. So they're kind of sneaking in that off week there. Maybe it's going to work. Maybe it's not going to work. I think they're doing decent with it, but once again, it's hard to say. I don't really have a firm grasp to give an opinion on it, to be honest with you.
Jim, has the PBC not learned that in order – I mean, again, maybe they don't even care about ticket sales, but a lot of fans do want to go to some of these events. Why don't they get venues early and announce the fight and then put tickets on sale like everyone else?
It's – I don't know. And then they hold the wrong seats back. They pretend like it's sold out when tickets are all sitting there. It's a bad business model, and I don't understand it. I mean,
then you got this January 14th card at the Barclays Center: Badu Jack, James DeGale, Pedraza versus Gervonta Davis. Do you know anything about that card? And it just seems they don't really care about. It's more name, I guess. It's not really about bringing locals.
That's another train wreck promotion there. I mean, that's another loser.
Yeah.
I mean,
Wow.
That's what I'm saying.
Well, I mean, if you look, listen, there's a simple way of doing things, which is the right way. First of all, that fight doesn't deserve to be in a room that in a room that big. The Barclays Center is a very hard. I mean, has there any? The Barclays Center, listen, it's a beautiful venue. I've worked hand in hand with promoters there and done decent, but that is not a selling venue. That is not where you want to put a fight like that. And with those two guys there, I mean, what do they really believe they're going to do? 3,500 people? I think that's a stretch, to be honest with you.
Right.
So
right.
Why are you putting in a venue that holds 18, 19,000 people? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, Badu Jack is just a guy. I mean, he's your typical TMT fighter. He, you know, been showcased on TV. He's not a draw. And James McGale's not exactly Ricky Hatton or even Joe Calzaghe as it relates to bringing fans over from the UK.
Not even the same sentence to those two guys. Not even close.
Yeah,
and Badu Jack is all of his fights have been on the West Coast because he fights out of Mayweather's gym in Las Vegas. So why suddenly they're doing this fight at the Barclays? I just don't understand why the choice of that. I mean, they're going to have the fight with Deontay Wilder, you know, in his home state in Birmingham, Alabama. That makes sense. I'm not going to complain about that. That makes perfect sense. But why are you moving these people around? Put them in their backyard, start to develop a base, get a fan base going. And sell some tickets, which obviously has not been, you know, their top priority as far as the production.
Jim, one thing that we've monitored and we've talked about this is the way Bob Arum and Top Rank have said, you know what, let's not be completely stupid for the time being. Let's lower some ticket prices. Let's get people into the event, make the event sellable. You made an absolute killing on Crawford Molina in Omaha, didn't you, a couple weeks ago?
Absolutely. I mean, that was actually the only good part. At first, I was obviously not happy that the Golovkin fight got pushed back, and then that took the slot. And listen, Top Rank scaled the arena, which is a beautiful arena right downtown Omaha. And for the people in Omaha, this is definitely their Super Bowl. You know, they scaled the arena for 9,200 people, and they ended up getting, I believe, the final number, and which is a real number, not the make-believe one they want to announce. I think they got close to 13,000 people in there. When you start doing numbers like that, when you put a realistic pricing and you have to say, oh, you know what, we're out of tickets, let's open up the upper level now, more and more seats, that is how you do it. Why does it have to be constantly backwards? Oh, we're going to sell 10,000 seats. Oh, we got 1,800 sold. I mean, there has to be a little realism. And if you look at what Top Rank has done, they've gone three shows back to back to back, even a show at the Cosmopolitan with
Lomachenko.
Thank you. Even that small venue, completely sold out. Not an empty seat in the house. The Pacquiao fight totally went, I believe, more than they expected. And the fight went crazy at the end, obviously, with prices exploding. But if you scale it with some realism, well, what do you know? You build momentum. I mean, if you look at the fight at T-Mobile Arena with Covilo Ward, that was a great matchup, very poor promotion. I mean, Steve, I saw you there. They pretended like the $50 tickets were sold out for 3.5 months, and the reality was on the one side of the arena, there's 12, not empty rows, not empty seats, not empty, you know, 12 sections completely empty. So if there's a realism about what they want to do and sell the seats, it's not rocket science. It's promoting 101.
Mm-hmm. Jim, what do you know about these new venues being opened by MGM Grand? I know Arum spoke to me last week about the one in Las Vegas. There's also another theater. I believe MGM's Grand is a part of this one, the Park Theater. They will be doing some boxing in the upcoming future, aren't they?
To be honest with you, I know the Park Theater, I've not been in there. I was actually there the night the theater opened, but I was at the basketball game at T-Mobile across the street. So it's right there at the Monte Carlo. It holds 4,500 people. I've heard it's an extremely, heavily tiered arena where you're going to be looking down, so most likely every seat is going to be very, very good. And it's interesting that Arum said he wants to go in there. That's a good sign.
Hmm.
So hopefully Jim, he's kind of, you know, past his whatever the issue he had with Richie Sturm earlier.
So, Jim, would you say right now from your perspective, you're in the ticket business, of everything that's on the calendar, it is Golovkin-Jacobs that is the best event. What if Chavez-Canelo comes to fruition?
Absolute monster. I love it. Hopefully it's in Las Vegas.
You're very biased business view, yes.
No, that is printing money. I mean, that is everybody's going to come out of it. I mean, listen, that's a great matchup. It's a matchup we, you know, talked about years ago, and I don't know how it's going to happen with the lawsuit, but hopefully it does happen. I also like the fight you mentioned earlier. I would love to see Joe Smith fight Shawny Monahan out on the island. That will be very, very, very good. So there's a lot of good stuff that seems to be kind of out there. And then, you know, Pacquiao Crawford, sign me up for that. There's a lot. It seems like this year is starting with a bang, and I think the promoters, with the continued budget crisis or whatever you want to call it with HBO and Showtime, that you have to start putting guys together that can put, you know, butts in seats. And that's, listen, I don't get any TV money, so they got to sell tickets. That's the way I get paid, so I like it.
Jim, you told me a few days ago, as it relates to the calls that you get for Golovkin in general in New York, he seems to cater to a very high-end crowd, is what you were telling me.
Yeah, I have a buddy of mine that has an office there, and his bread and butter, he's been open there for over 30 years, is a very, very high-end clientele. And when he fought Lemieux, I partnered up with him, and at the end, it was just high-end, high-end, high-end business, which shows more than anything else that Golovkin has really become mainstream, because those are mainstream. Those are not people who go to small fights. He's become mainstream. I spoke with him last week after the fight was announced, and the fact of the matter is he's getting a lot of calls from Wall Street, and it's a high-end crowd. They want to see the big drama show, and I think that is how a guy breaks through, you know, be it the Michael Jordan brand that is behind him, be it the knockout, whatever it is. When those people start wanting to go, that means you're starting to become, you know, a superstar, and I believe that's what he's going to ultimately become.
Jim, looking at this past year as a boxing fan, anything stand out to you? What's your everlasting memory of 2016?
Well, I mean, the year started off so poor. I mean, it was ridiculous. At one point, I think we got into, like, March, and we had one fight in Vegas, and that was, like, downtown at the D. So it was the year started so slow, and, you know, things definitely started to pick up. I was listening to you guys on the show earlier, and I definitely think Salido Vargas was fight of the year. That was a great show. I had a lot of fun out there. I love the StubHub Center. And Lomachenko versus Salido out there, I think that makes perfect sense. You know, the second half of the year definitely picked up. And I think there's a little bit of momentum right now going forward. I mean, I don't think Joe Smith getting the fight of the year. I think that once again, we have to kind of change directions with the same old passing of the guard. Give it to the new guys. That's why I want to see Pacquiao fight Crawford. That's why I want to see Lomachenko get these big matchups. I mean, there's a lot of young, great fighters now that need to be featured by television and put in a big fight. So I think 2016 is almost over, and Happy New Year's, everybody. And I think 2017 is going to be very, very good, especially with, you know, four or five fights that we've talked about that have a potential being made.
Jim, if people want to reach you for any ticket requests or questions, what is your information?
Just hit me up on Twitter, as a lot of the radio listeners do, and I do appreciate all the questions and calls I get at KO Tickets, or give me a call at my office, 1-800-283-8699, 800-283-8699.
Okay, Jim, as always, listen, thanks for the time. Have a great New Year's, and I'll see you soon, buddy.
Definitely. Gabe, Steve, thank you very much.
All right,
cool.
That was
pleasure,
Mr. Then. KO Tickets giving you the scoop, the skinny, the bottom line in the ticket brokering business. So there you have it. I mean, this is one of my favorite segments, Gabe, because one thing I've preached for years is the actual improving of customer service to boxing fans, who, quite frankly, I think have been used and abused by the boxing industry. I think a guy like Mr. Jim Boone is an invaluable service to our listeners.
Oh yeah, I'm embarrassed to tell him that I bought preseason Rams tickets. I'm sure he would have told me, just hold off and just come down and buy them on the day.
You know, it reminds me of that joke. First prize on this radio contest is two Rams season tickets, and they say, okay, what's second prize? Four Rams season tickets. But anyway, 347-215-7598 Steve Kim, Gabe Montoya. We bid farewell to 2016, and we look ahead to the new year in boxing on the next round. Gabe, we have any calls left?
I think we do. 510, you're live on the next round.
Hey, Gabe. Hey, Steve. It's Randall here in Richmond. Happy holidays, man.
Oh, same to you, Fernando.
Man. Good, man. I got the flu, so I'm maybe a little rough.
My
question for you is, like, I know, dude, the flu's bad, man. I missed it my whole weekend. I've been taking shots of Theraflu instead of shots of eggnog, man. More whiskey. That'll clear me out. I got a question, dude. Like, when are we going to get less? It seems like going all the way back to, like, the early 2000s when we had, like, Floyd Mayweather and Roy Jones Jr. on HBO. As an HBO subscriber since back in the 2000s, early 2000s, it seems like the focus has always been on showcase fights and not real fights, you know? Like, and during that same time, you had Showtime, like, in the mid-2000s, they put on a lot of great fights, you know, like the Corrales series with Casamayor and Castillo fighting a bunch of different guys. That was a good time, man. Like, when did HBO follow, like, the – yeah. When did HBO follow that model, giving us maybe a tier below but better fights, you know? Like, that, you know, that's all we really want, the great fights. You know, you could go with the young guys, like the Lomachenkos of the world and stuff like that. You could focus with them instead. What do you guys think?
Well, we were talking about it earlier that this is kind of a transition period in boxing. We are starting to get to see these guys and that are like Terence Crawford, Vasyl Lomachenko. We remember, you know, he cut out 10 fights. He's just gone straight to the good fights, you know, for the most part, looking at a rematch with Orlando Salido. But there's a lot of young guys. So I think Joshua Franco, like real young, you know, turned pro late last year or this year. Edgar Valerio, another one that Steve really likes. I like him too. Starting to get noticed, but he's only got like less than 10 fights. There's another kid whose name escapes me at the moment that turned pro, is like 3-0, a light heavyweight fighting for Golden Boy. So you got young guys like that you hope will pan out. You got the Joseph Diaz's who are kind of turning the corner. Hopefully Felix Verdejo doesn't ride a motorcycle this year and really kind of fulfills his potential. And then you got, like I said, the guys that are kind of taking over. But you're also seeing that it was a down year for PBC. So maybe next year they've got to put these guys, you know, with Garcia Thurman on tap. You'll start seeing big-name fights. And, you know, Frampton and Leo Santa Cruz are rematching. I think we'll start to see some depth, but – you know, it was a barren year. It came on strong at the end, but man, it started like hell.
I'm excited for next year though. Like with the heavyweight division, I think like it's finally starting to awaken a little bit. Recently,
yeah.
You heard Deontay Wilder calling out the other heavyweights. You know, I think that would be it's going to be a good year for heavyweights this year too. Maybe.
As they say, it can only get better. So hopefully it can't get worse.
One last thing, like not boxing related, football related. I was watching the Rams Niners game. I'm a Niners fan, but all my friends are Rams. All my cousins are Rams fans. Do you think the Chargers are making a big mistake by going to LA? It seemed like that Coliseum was mostly 49er fans this weekend. I don't know if the Chargers are going to find any fans in LA either.
I think that San Diego had given up on that team ever coming back. By the way, San Diego, as bad as they are, and they had an embarrassing loss, when they are healthy at the start of next year, that's a good team. I'm telling you, they have a nice nucleus. They still have a good quarterback. They've drafted well. If they stay healthy next year, I think they could have a big bounce back season.
Yeah, I wonder about
that.
Happy
New Year, guys. Thank you.
Oh, you too.
Thank you, Fernando.
Two football teams in one city? I don't know.
More than I wanted. Jeez.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we'll see. I mean, it makes it easier. I mean, we'll get to see some Ram games again next year. I mean, you know, you go when they're shitty because it's generally how they are. They're the Rams. 530, you're live on the next round.
Hi, guys. It's Mike from Auburn.
Mike,
hey,
what is
Mike.
Going on? Now, Mike, I think you announced it. Are you making the 3,000-mile trek for the weekend of March 18th?
I am doing that.
Wow,
and in
it
fact,
happened.
I followed your advice and called Jim Boone's office before the tickets went on sale. And the advice I got, I didn't talk to Jim. I talked to an associate he had in the office, and they said, go do the presale. So I had my ticket within the first 5 minutes of the presale.
Now, did you get the tickets you wanted?
Section 107.
Okay, I guess you did. I got to tell you, it's going to be an electric atmosphere. It's going to be a fun weekend because the night before, Top Rank will be staging the debut of heavily hyped Irish Olympian Michael Conlon at the theater. So it'll be Boxing Palooza 2017.
Healthy pats on an Irish Olympian on St. Patty's weekend in New York.
It almost makes too much sense.
If my flights are on time, I might have a chance to get over there for that.
Oh, that's great. So, Mike, how excited are you to be making this trek?
I'm not excited at all to be making the trek, but I am excited to be there once the trek is over.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, the travel. It'll be, Mike, it'll be a little easier catching your flights than it is, let's say, this past weekend, okay?
This is true.
Do you like New York?
Yeah, I've never been to New York City.
Is that right?
I have traveled fairly extensively all through the United States, but that's one of the areas I have never been to. So I am kind of looking forward to seeing New York City.
Mike,
it's
is this your
different
first...
than Auburn.
Yes.
Just warning you.
Mike, is this your first garden party for boxing?
It is, and that was another compelling factor. You know, see, I go back to the time of Ali Frazier 1 in the garden and the build-up for that fight. And so you might say a big event at the Garden, especially a big fight, is kind of a bucket list for me. And the combination of Gennady Golovkin fighting a well-respected contender in Danny Jacobs just kind of put it together, and I said, okay, let's not miss that one.
March 8th, 1971, Ali Frazier,
that's
fight of
right.
the century.
I will retire Joe Frazier.
So, Mike, is it pretty much clear that the only fights you go to now involve Gennady Golovkin?
Well, actually, you touched on my biggest regret in boxing last year, and that was not taking your direct advice and going down to the StubHub Center.
Salido Vargas. Oh, that was such a no-brainer. A no-brainer, Mike.
Well, and I hit it with the no-brain.
Now, Mike,
at least I did see the fight.
Now, for the Ides of March, Mike, are you bringing the wife? Was that part of the deal?
No, she decided that she didn't want to go for that quick of a turnaround trip.
Ooh, you got the hall pass, Mike.
Yeah.
Good job, Mike.
So it's the red eye right back after the fight.
So
right?
I will be traveling alone, but I suspect I'll be able to find a few people that I know.
Yeah, Mike, don't worry. You'll catch the pre-parties and the after-parties with us. Don't worry about that. Mike, what stands out to you as a boxing fan this past year? Anything?
Oh, boy, it was a lean year, but I'd say the significance of the Kovalev-Ward fight stood out. That plus the fact that it was a very compelling fight throughout, right up until the time the judges got into the act and announced their decision. That was a little tough. I really thought Kovalev won between 7 and 8 rounds out of that fight. One of them
most people
that 10-8
did.
Round. Yeah. So that was it. I've watched Golovkin's fight against Kell Brook several times. And, I do think Kell Brook injected some drama just by landing some punches with some effective flurries. Let's say more so than Dominic Wade did in his two-rounder. I did enjoy that. But in terms of the overall quality, Salido Vargas, of course, was really special. And then the Ward-Kovalev fight, I think, was the big significant one.
Okay. So, Mike, obviously you're going March 18th to Golovkin-Jacobs. Of the pay-per-view bouts that have been lined up, are there any others you're purchasing?
I would probably purchase Canelo Chavez.
Okay.
Even though I kind of doubt that it'll be a competitive fight. I think Chavez probably is not going to be competitive against Canelo, but that's... I thought, but just because of the event, I would probably purchase that. Clearly, I would probably find a way to avoid Cotto Kirkland. In fact, I changed that to a there's no way in hell I would buy that. So that one's just ridiculous. You wrote about that this morning, and you know, the other key thing that when you mentioned it on the show earlier was both of them, just neither one of them have fought in over a year. Both of them lost to Canelo in their last fight, but Kirkland lost in even more, well, much more dramatic fashion than Cotto. At least Cotto was competitive.
Yeah. The question is, yeah, Gabe, the question is, after Kirkland loses to Cotto, which big fight does he get in 2019? That's the big question.
He's going to fight Pacquiao and Mayweather at the same time, I think.
Mike, anything else?
Guys, no, I want to let you get to – I'm sure Jimmy's on the line.
Okay.
We actually, he's not, strangely enough.
Wow. Where is he?
Yeah.
Huh.
I don't know.
He of all people
ought
to be both on the line and ought to be in New York on the weekend of 318.
I think Jimmy's going to be there. We're going to ask him if he's there. Hey, Jimmy, if you're out there, call in. Pull up a stool, please.
Yeah.
Okay, guys. Talk to you later.
All right, Mike. Have a great New Year, okay?
You too. Bye.
Thank you very much. Well, there it is, folks. Mike from Auburn and Mario Lopez, they are both making the trip to Golovkin-Jacobs. It's set in stone. Wow. This is a star-studded event, Montoya.
It is the place to be, right? You know, there's no question it's the place to be, this fight.
Gabe,
I keep looking at it, and I'm like, my birthday is in March, you know?
Gabe, I told every one of my gigs, I said, guys, don't plan anything, or you can. I'm not going to be there. This is my one mini vacation. I'm going to be in New York, come hell or high water, March 18th.
Yeah, there's just no question. You know, I don't care what's on. I'm watching it, at least that. It's just, you know, it's hard to plan, trying to book a play for the rest of the year. Oh, there he is, right on cue. 978, Jimmy's Corner, you're live on the next round.
Jimmy.
Hey, gentlemen.
What's going on? So, Jimmy, are you in for March 18th?
You know, I'm doing everything I can to get there. I have something. It's kind of an anniversary. My old man passed.
Stuff
going on. So there's something kind of. But yeah, no, I'm working on everything to kind of, you know, get down there. I'll be real upset if I don't. I'm counting on. I'm pretty much counting on going, but you know what I mean. That's one of those things. But I'll be very disappointed if I don't. But. I'm just actually pumped it's going down, you know. Let me ask you, I missed a lot of the first part of the show because something I couldn't get out of. What's the story? Steve, I read your article today, the one you put out. Excellent. That was excellent. I just actually wrote it a little while ago. Excellent work. What do you think now? Is Rigondeaux actually going to be on? Is he really on the undercard that night?
Well, everything that I've read indicates that he's going to be on that show, and I guess he's fighting is mandatory because it's his turn. I was actually surprised he wasn't on the Ward-Kovalev fight, you know, but he wasn't. But all indications are he will be getting Guillermo Rigondeaux February 25th.
Wow. I mean, they said a lot of stuff about him, too. You know, the analysis. Wow. I never thought he'd make it back on there.
When it's a pay-per-view show, and this is where, again, people always are misguided in their criticism. It's not up to the network. I mean, listen, do you think HBO really wanted Butterbean and Mia St. John and Yuri Borman in the past? No, but, I mean, once it's a pay-per-view and it's the promoter's dime, it's also their time and discretion.
Right, so this doesn't come off the bottom line. This doesn't come out of, like, discretionary funds of HBO.
No.
This is straight. No. So,
no.
Okay, so there's nothing. All right. Like what happened with Ward last year, well, this year, like, paying for some of those crappy fights. Okay, so it's just basically it's on top of your regular HBO subscription. If you want it, you buy it.
Yeah.
If not, don't. Okay, well, I'll be missing out on that one. I can guarantee you that one. No, but I know you got people behind me and stuff.
No.
I just got to actually out of
the
car, but listen, I'm 99 just don't want to commit 100% and then look like an idiot not show up, but 99% sure I'll be there though. I'm really looking forward to it, man. I'm actually pumped. But, yeah, no, great show, guys. I'll let you finish up with us.
Jimmy, before we let you go, what stood out to you this year? Did you have a fight of the year, fighter of the year, KO of the year, snafu of the year?
Yeah.
Anything come to mind?
Yeah, Joe Smith. I really like that kid. I really like like everything he did. As far as the story, just to come out of nowhere, it's such a – it's almost like, well, you know, it was handpicked by Fanfara. You know what I mean? His people like, look at this kid, big, strong, you know, white kid. We're going to get you on national TV. This is going to propel you. Bang. He puts him out. You know what I mean? Complete. He was like, you weren't supposed to do this, dude. You went against it. And then no matter what, you know, his people say, I mean, I know a lot of his people are saying, oh, you know, he picked that because he don't want to go out like, you know, everybody else cherry picking. So he picked a tough guy. Bullshit. Hopkins didn't pick fucking
Jimmy,
Joe Smith thinking that was even going to – yes.
You know what was interesting? After the fight, as the press conference is going on at the forum, I spoke with a member of Team Hopkins who's been there for years, good guy. And I said to him, geez. I go, and again, I know hindsight's always 20/20, but I said, you know, you guys might have been just better off getting a super middleweight that can't punch and bring him up to 75. And the guy looked at me and said, I don't disagree.
Yeah.
He made a mistake. Simple as
that.
No,
That was a huge mistake, huge mistake. That kid can crack, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what he can do. I don't want to say his name over, but, you know, he DM'd me. He said, you know, he knows in the New York area, and he says he didn't do too well, supposedly, against some lesser guys in the gym. But, you know what I mean? Again, until I see it or hear it from somebody that I know personally, but from what I don't know. What do you think? Do you think he's legit, or it's just been –
you know, we're going to
so
find
far.
Out. Listen, the one thing that everyone knows about Joe Smith now is he punches, and now there's tape on him. He can't sneak up on anybody. And I still think they have to be very, very adroit in terms of their matchmaking. And listen, Joe DiGuardia, Ron Katz, the matchmaker, these are boxing veterans. They're not stupid. They know what they're doing. They know what they have. And listen, I think they'd be doing a disservice if they went right in with another fight where they're the heavy underdog. In many respects, and again, I know that the whole deserve phrase, me and gay boys jump on that, but if there's a guy that has the right to build a little bit of something and to build upon this momentum, it is Joe Smith. And you know
Absolutely.
What? A fight with him and Monahan, I think, does really good business out there in New York.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Oh, and for me, fight of the year, hands down, Salido Vargas, not even close. That's for me. That's the fight of the year. The people who, if anything, from the PVC, I would put, you know, people say Thurman Porter. I think Cruz Frampton was a better fight than Thurman Porter. I thought
Agreed.
Thurman Porter myself, I thought it was kind of sloppy, actually. It seemed like two, like, it didn't seem like they were sharp. You know what I mean? If that was their fifth fight of the year, imagine how much sharper they would have been. It's just,
well, you know what I called it?
How it goes.
Athletic flailing.
Yes.
What it was. Athletic flailing.
That's perfect. Exactly what it was. No, absolutely. Yeah, no, then, so that's pretty much, other than that, you know, I'm just actually so excited for the 18th because, you know, not to seem like a, you know, little childish jerk, but isn't this the fight that finally, I mean, I'm just curious what the whole legion of haters, what does this do? I mean, what are they going to do when they can't, like, say, little G's never fought anybody? I swear to God, I really believe they don't want him to win, or they don't actually even want this fight to happen.
No, I've said this. I've tweeted it. I'm firmly of the belief that they wanted this fight not to happen so they could say he's ducking, they're not being fair, Tom Loeffler can't get a deal done, Golovkin hasn't fought anybody, and that Jacobs is better. I'm telling you, they were ready to pounce on it. And
right.
There's been an audible silence, in fact, downright crickets from certain factions now that the fight is made. I find that
Agreed.
Interesting.
Agreed, 100%. And I purposely go to see what they say. Yeah, no, dead silence. All right, well, hey, gentlemen, listen, awesome show as usual. I'll definitely be talking next week. You have a great evening.
Next year.
Oh, next year, absolutely.
Yeah, we're going to take a week or two off, but we'll be back soon.
Excellent.
Yeah.
I'll be there. All right, gentlemen.
All right,
you have a great evening.
Jimmy, absolutely. Thank you. You have a great New Year's. And we are now past the 90-minute mark. I see the Cowboys and Lions on my television screen. Gabe, do we have any more calls?
We did, but they just dropped off, so I think that's a good
Must be Lions and Cowboys fans.
Yeah, seriously. So there
you
go.
You know what? And that's not the worst thing. All right, well, folks, that's it. Our 2016 is done. We'll be kicking off next week and maybe the week after that because, quite frankly, we deserve it. But anyway, on behalf of David Duenas and the rest of the Leave It in the Ring Radio Network, on behalf of Gabe Montoya and Steve Kim, this is the next round. We'll see you next year. Bye.